Today, in episode 60 of the podcast, I am speaking with Charlie Kinnison. Now, Charlie is a music educator, he is a singer, he is a family man, and he is just an all-around great guy. And he and his wife, Carrie, run Kinnison Choral Company, which works to provide choral practice tracks to choir directors and their singers. Now, in our conversation, we cover a wide variety of topics, one of those being how music literacy and practice tracks can and should coexist in a choral program. We also talk about the important work that they are doing with Kinnison Choral Company and how they can make your life better as a choir director. I'm so excited to share this conversation with you because I know you are going to love it. Let's get into it. Here we go. Hey. I'm so excited to welcome Charlie Kinnison of Kinnison Choral Company to the podcast. Welcome, Charlie. Thanks so much for visiting with me today.
Matt, thank you so much for having me. I'm just absolutely honored to be on your podcast. This is so much fun already.
Well, I'm excited to have you here and excited to share your story and what you do, because I think it's a tremendous resource for choir directors out in the world. So I think my audience is going to get a lot of value out of this. So before we dive in, let's get a little bit of your background. Tell us a little bit of your story, your education, musical background, those sorts of things.
Yeah. So my entire family is filled with musicians. Both my parents are jazz musicians, award-winning jazz musicians. All four of my grandparents were either church musicians or educators themselves, music educators. And I come from a big family. I have four older sisters and a little brother, and we all sort of were like forced to take piano lessons, you know, and which is good, you know. But I'm the only one out of the six of us that became a music educator. We all still play piano. We all still sing. But I'm the one that like pursued it as a career and went to college for it. And so, you know, all through high school, I was doing band, I was doing choir. I actually didn't start choir till sophomore year because that's when my voice changed. And before that, I thought singing was so dumb.
You know? Sure.
Like I did like children's choir, and then, you know, my body started changing. I was like, this is so stupid. I'm just going to play drums and band. Which I'm sure so many of your listeners hopefully can relate.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was doing piano lessons. I was, you know, on the drum line. I was in a concert band. And then when I finally started taking choir again as a sophomore, I was like, oh, this is really fun. Like I miss singing. I made Allstate choir my junior year of high school here in Missouri. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. So I was Missouri Allstate choir junior year, Missouri Allstate choir senior year. And then going into college, I kind of had like a trio of choices where I could be a percussion major, a piano major, or a vocal major, or, you know, it became music education after that. And I sort of felt that I was better at singing than anything else. And I didn't have to lug around like equipment that way, you know, being like,
absolutely,
a percussion major. I was like, what's gonna, you know, not be as fun. So I ended up going to University of Missouri, St. Louis, and I studied under Dr. Jim Henry. And if any of your listeners are fans of Barbershop, they will know the name Jim Henry. He's in the Hall of Fame. He is a two-time quartet award, gold medal winning international champion with the Gas House Gang and Crossroads. And he's literally one of the best directors I have ever stood in front of, both Barbershop and Choral. So he was the head of choral studies at UMSL when I went there. And when I went there, I knew nothing about Barbershop, actually, except that there was a chorus like filled with 130 something guys, and they were pretty good. But I grew up in like church music and like choral music. So Barbershop was like nothing to me, really. I just didn't know anything about it. So I started at UMSL, and I started as a vocal performance major, as most like seniors do. They're like, I'm going to be an opera star. And then like, you know, a month later, you get that reality check from like all your professors for it's like, okay, what are you going to do with it? So we had this sort of, I just remember this one rehearsal that Dr. Henry sat concert choir down and gave this really good like pep talk of like, there's not enough good educators in the world and yada, 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 yada. It sort of inspired me to change my major, luckily before anything really I had to like change anything, to music education. And so I did that. So I took all my ed classes. I took all my music ed classes. I fulfilled my student teaching. And then right after I student taught, the day after I student taught, I got my first job. Like I just put my application in at a high school here in St. Louis and I got the job. So it was fantastic. I felt super, super lucky. And even better, it was team teaching, you know, so I was a co-director with this guy who had been teaching there for like 10 years. So I almost felt like I was still student teaching, but now with a salary. So it was,
yeah.
I just felt so lucky that I got put into that position. So I learned so much from him. And you know, with student teaching, it's like you make no money unless you teach lessons. And even then it's like really hard. So I'm right. So thankful. I'm so thankful for my first year of teaching. And I learned so much that I had this itching to own my own program, you know, not that it wasn't great, but I've always just, you know, had this feeling of just like leadership and, you know, being able to take the reins sort of thing. I'm just always geared towards that. So after my first year there, I left that school and got a job at another high school here in St. Louis. I had a huge program. The director had just retired after like 20 some odd years. And I think there was one director in between her and I. So I wasn't coming in like super fresh. So, which is actually a good thing, you know, like when you have a director like that leave, it's like, oh my gosh, you have huge shoes to fill. Thankfully, someone else came in and did that for a year. And then I was able to fill in after that. So again, I just got super lucky with that. And we had a huge program. I had a show choir, a concert choir, an advanced treble chamber choir, and then a freshman girls choir. My favorite was advanced treble chamber. It's just, you know, we just did some awesome, awesome music together. And I learned so much about the female voice and treble voices in general. And it was so much fun. And so I taught there for about 3 years. So I taught for about 4 years total. And everything started to change. And you'll probably know this too. Once we had our first child, Nora, who's now 5, and she was born in February. And like, you know, I think I took like a week and a half off or something to be with, you know, my wife and Nora, who was a newborn and everything. And then, my wife, actually, we met in college in concert choir in our university singers. So if there's any like, you know, mushy gushy people listeners, it's like, that's our love story. Like I was choir president, like shook her hand and like, she was like, oh, he's kind of cute. I'm like, no, I'm not, please. So we met in college choir. And then she was a music teacher too. She taught elementary music. And okay. So she had left teaching once she got pregnant. She taught in the city of St. Louis. And when she left, she started to do some freelance like educational writing because her passion was still education, you know, and she had always been a good writer. And so she started doing that sort of on the side. And from February to May, like Nora, you know, she was 3 months old when school ended, you know, for the summer, and she didn't really do anything. So my wife could stay home full time with her and, you know, make some extra dough because she was a freelancer. She was her own boss sort of thing.
Right.
And then in the summer, this is when things really started to shift for our life. Over the summer, I was able to stay at home and Nora was getting more mobile and Carrie couldn't work as much, but like I was there. So it really didn't affect a ton. And then in August, when we had to go back, I'm like, okay, I got to go back to work. You know, I got to, you know, work 40 to 60 hours a week with this huge choral program that I have. And we talked about it. And once I went back, it's like full disclosure to everyone out there and all the, you know, teacher parent, you know, combinations, we started to like lose money because I was gone so much and Carrie couldn't work as much and childcare is so expensive. Right. So we like really started to lose money and we sat and talked about it and we thought, okay, like Carrie was a freelancer. She was her own boss. She was sort of entrepreneurial in that mindset. We're like, that's kind of, and she was able to stay at home. And so we're like, okay, we can work more to make more. As you know, when I was a teacher, I couldn't work more or less. So I just bring home the same salary. And it was like, it was there every week and it was consistent, which was really trustworthy and nice. But we made this big decision. Like I personally couldn't be the best teacher I wanted to be, the best husband I wanted to be, and the best father I wanted to be. Like there are diamond people out there like that. I just wasn't that. You know, I didn't know how to balance it. So after, like, I think I left after the first month school started back up, and I felt terrible about it. And a lot of parents, thankfully, were really supportive. And they're like, you know, you're not going to miss, you know, you shouldn't miss your daughter growing up and, like, you know, all these things that she does new. And, you know, if you're working so much, you might miss some. And I just wanted to, like, be with my wife and daughter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I left teaching, which was really, really difficult because, you know, as a college kid, I was like, I'm gonna be a teacher for life. I'm gonna retire, you know, in my 50s, you know, in Missouri. It's like your whole life just sort of falls apart when that happens. And so after that happened, we still wanted to be, our passion was still music, choral music and education. And we're like, okay, how can we still be in this, like, quote unquote industry without being in the traditional classroom? And I had done a few, like, you know, what, I don't know if your listeners call them practice tracks or learning files or rehearsal tracks. We tend to use the phrase choral rehearsal tracks. I did a few of them, like, before we had kids and I was still teaching. I did them for, like, some of my men's ensembles, for solo and ensemble. And it just, they learned the music much more quickly. After I had taught it to them, I was a huge solfege person, still am. Like, we sight read every day. We did solfege. I always had my kids write in the solfege and the score. We sang on solfege. So I would teach my kids, and then I'd be like, all right, I taught you the notes once. Here are your core rehearsal tracks on, you know, Google Classroom or whatever. Like, go polish it. Like, I taught you once. Now it's your responsibility. And I couldn't make rehearsal tracks for everything, but I noticed that the ones that I did, the kids learned their notes and words and rhythms a lot more quickly than the kids who didn't, you know? And I was able to, like, dig into the music and, like, make memorable music with these kids that, like, will always have that connection, you know, because we got past all the nuts and bolts very quickly. And I was able to, like, mold something that changed their lives and changed my life too, you know? And so so when I had that thought, it just, like, a light bulb went off in my head. I was like, there's not enough of that out there. I've experienced, like, the amazing feeling from just getting past the notes and words and rhythms and, like, you know, teaching music literacy, and then getting to the point where you have the ability to dig into the music. Even if your life has changed in rehearsal, it's like, there could be, you know, that one alto who's just taking choir just to take it. And she feels kind of like she doesn't know how to read music, and she just feels like an outcast. And she can use these rehearsal tracks to, like, know her part and feel more confident in choir. And then maybe she can start making friends in choir, like lifelong friends. And then maybe there's a point in a rehearsal or a performance where, like, she gets goosebumps and something happens to her. And she's like, something out there is greater than what I can do by myself. And her life has changed forever. All based on just me and Carrie just singing some of the music into a microphone, you know?
Right. Just, yeah.
So that's why we're so passionate about what we do when we make these choral rehearsal tracks, because we know it gives the director and the singers the ability to have their lives changed, which is really exciting to me.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, that's the ultimate goal, you know? All of the other music stuff can become secondary, and it's about how can you impact the lives of the people that are in front of you. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, especially nowadays, because it's so, you know, today is so technologically advanced that you don't get a ton of, like, human interaction anymore. It's almost like choir is one of the last, I don't want to say frontiers, because it's been around for ages, but it's like one of the last mediums that you can get that true, vulnerable, trustworthy human interaction. And it's I don't think it will ever go away. I mean, it did with virtual choirs for a while, but that was different.
I think we're all ready to sort of forget that aspect of choral history.
Let's edit that part out.
Yep. We're all glad to sort of return to quote unquote our new normal here.
Right,
I think so.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think we have a lot of similarities. You know, first off, you know, I met my wife in college choir as well. She's also an elementary music teacher. So she's going on, gosh, 24, 25 years, all at the same elementary. And you're talking about music literacy. I'm going to circle back to that a little bit, because that is also one of my big things is music literacy. You know, we use solfege, we use Takadimi, and you know, I've used different kinds of methods of creating, you know, practice tracks or choral rehearsal tracks before. And I've seen on different forums or different discussions online where, you know, some people sort of talk a little bit negatively about rehearsal tracks and maybe how like the that has a negative influence on teaching your students music literacy. So when you were doing that in the classroom, did you ever, by having your students utilize those tracks, did you ever see any sort of semblance of, you know, their music literacy skills or that process being hindered in any sort of way?
I agree with you. I think there's a lot of, you know, talk on both sides about this sort of this, I guess I say product, you know, there are people who are like religious by it and they always, you know, use rehearsal tracks for everything. And then there are those people who like never use it because they believe that it hinders music literacy. In my opinion, on being both sides of it as like an educator and now making them, it just depends on how you use them. And there is a certain way to like use rehearsal tracks that can help grow with music literacy and just help get to that like performance level that you want to get at. There are wrong ways to use this, you know, like you don't sure. just like, introduce a song, hand out, you know, the octavo and be like, all right, the tracks are on Google Classroom. Like go teach it, like go listen. It's like, no, that doesn't do anything. Like you're not teaching that. You know? And so I again, as a teacher, I didn't have the time in the world to do every single song. So I only did maybe a handful, like over the 4 years I was teaching, but I noticed, you know, my kids who weren't as good of readers, we would always do solfege, always do sight reading practice every day in the classroom, every single day. And that, you know, with the choral rehearsal tracks, it helped them gain the confidence when we actually moved to the repertoire. Like, yeah, they would still, you know, kind of like sing with their mouth closed a little bit when we did solfege, but at the very least it gave them confidence, you know, and they could work on their music literacy at a slower pace than what some of maybe the other kids were doing, you know, that the pace was correct for them. And with the ones that we make them to where, like we have some mute tracks, like there could be like a tenor mute track to, you know, Lacrimosa or something like that. And I found that those helped the kids who were really good at sight reading because they could hit their, you know, tenor mute track, alto mute track, and sight read their part with everything else going on and make it sound like a real choir. Because there are like, you know, some teachers make like piano tracks and stuff, which is really helpful, but to have the human voice and not only the human voice, but voices to make it sound like a choir when you're actually rehearsing rather than like a quartet singing in your ears. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. It's definitely a balance between the two. Like the yeah. music literacy and practice tracks can coexist. It's just yeah. all about how you're using them in that process.
Yeah. Like you don't want to use them for every song because then I feel like the kids will lean on them too much, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I have found too that, you know, coming from, because I was in band and choir growing up, and in band, I think there's definitely sort of this tradition, this mindset of practice. Like yeah. I go and practice these skills every single day. You know, I'm doing scales, I'm doing other things, and not so much in the choral world. And,
no. and
so for me, it's giving the students a tool that they can use outside of the choral rehearsal to then go and practice. And in a way, it sort of gets rid of that, that excuse. You know, yeah. you can say to students, oh, well, did you practice yesterday? Well, I don't have anything to practice. Oh, yes, you do. You have this practice track right here.
Right. And yeah, it's good that you bring that up, Matt, because, you know, when I'm educating people on choral rehearsal tracks, I bring that up too, of like how, you know, band people or orchestra people, like they go home and practice, they can go out in the hall and practice, but they don't, and all your band people are going to like hate me when I say this, but like, they don't have to audiate, you know, their music as much as singers have to. I mean, yep. some of the better ones do. And some of the better ones even sing, you know, their parts, but I mean, truly like your average high school, you know, trumpet player is not going to audiate his part out in the hallway or at home. But when you hand, you know, when you hand, like, I think I had mentioned Zeev Randall Stroop. I'll just use him as an example. When you hand a Stroop piece to, you know, some of your concert choir members and say, like, you know, go home and practice. It's like, they can't, if they don't know how to play piano, let alone, you know, they're still learning music literacy, how are they gonna, they have no reference point, you know? They just haven't, they have nothing to do. So it is a cool rehearsal. Tracks are a tool for singers, just like how, you know, a band person's own instrument is their tool.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about how then you got started. So you're making this transition from teaching to sort of essentially owning and running your own business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that process and how you got started in this business.
Yeah. I mean, man, with every entrepreneur, there's like those dark times when you first start out. And it's like, you have no direction and, you know, your finances are like thrown all over the place and you can't even get laundry done. You know, it's like your whole life just turned upside down, especially coming from a whole different industry. Like, I didn't take any business courses in undergrad, like none at all. So I was just like starting this from scratch. But, you know, like I said, like we felt like it was our avenue to stay within the music education industry, which we are still so passionate about. And we had a good friend, maybe some of your listeners know, girl conductor, Maria Ellis. Mm-hmm. She was in our wedding. She's a really close friend of ours. Funny enough, Matt,
wow.
She came and babysat our other three kids while Carrie was having our baby like 2 days ago. So I came home, they call her TT Rhea and they love TT Rhea. And yes, so I came home to girl conductor babysitting my three kids while I was at the hospital. So anyway, you know, at the time, Maria was working for St. Louis Children's Choir and she had called me to like do a quick rehearsal track for their tenor section only for like one piece. She's like, hey, can you record this on piano for me? Like really fast. And I just thought like, why don't I just sing it? Like, why do I have to play it on piano? And so I just sang the tenor part and sent it to her. And I'd like, you know, I used GarageBand and like it did like a little like very quick like post-production that I found on YouTube, you know, like an hour long video. I was like, I'll try this. And she sent it back. She's like, oh my gosh, this is like so good. How did you do this? I was like, oh, I just like sang it, you know, did GarageBand, did this and did this. She's like, can you do another one for me? But can you do like all the men's parts? I was like, oh, sure. So like I recorded the accompaniment on my keyboard, put it in the GarageBand, recorded the bass part, recorded the tenor part. And I sent it to her, she's like, this is awesome. Like, can you do more for me? And it was funny. I, when we first started this, I was doing soprano, alto, tenor, bass, like all of it. Cause you know, like I had to sing that stuff. I'm sure you do, like in choir all the time. It's like you sing an octave under your sopranos and some of your sopranos don't get it. My wife is a soprano. And there was one, we were doing a Moses Hogan piece. Oh, I can't remember what it was. Oh, Elijah Rock. That's what it was. Mm. And there was like a high C or something. And I tried, Matt, I tried and tried and tried to sing high C so much. And I was like, I mean, we have, you know, our daughter at that point, she slept all the time. I was like, Carrie, can you just like come sing this for me one time? She rocked it. I mean, like first take, it was just like, but and it was perfect. I was like, hold on a second. I have an idea.
Yeah. Like, light bulb.
Yeah. I was like, can you just do all the women's parts? Cause she's a great, I mean, we like sight read at home for fun. Like after the kids go to bed, like, hey, we have this new order. You want to come sight read with me? We're like, yeah, sure. Like, we're just total nerds. So she could sight read like none other. And she just, she recorded like all four parts of the women's. And we were like, okay, this, I have an idea. Like, why don't we just keep doing this? And we had a lot of our clients at the time be like, my eighth grade girls don't want to sing with you in your falsetto. I'm like, hey, that makes two of us. I don't either. I was like, so why don't I get my wife to do it? And like, it's actually the correct timbre and like doesn't sound like strained male trying to like full voice like a high C. You know?
Right.
So from there on, it sort of took off. And we just, you know, we got these random orders from like just people we knew, you know, it was like word of mouth. And, you know, I think I'm in this Facebook group of like entrepreneurs and I was just telling people in there, I was like, when we first started, it's like we created our logo on Canva and like we had a Squarespace website and like all these things. It was like sort of like, it was like very, you know, claw, like a grinding, you know, we were just grind. And thankfully since then, you know, we've professionally rebranded into Kinnison Coral Company. We've had people build our website and like, we've just had a lot of success, and we're so incredibly thankful for, you know, all the directors out there that believe in this sort of product and want to change, you know, people's lives in the audience, their singers themselves, you know, just with us silly, like singing silly notes into a microphone.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the website here towards the end, but yeah, it is a beautiful, beautiful website. So yeah,
I didn't make it. I made the Squarespace one years ago. That was
right.
It worked.
That's yeah. And let's pause for a second. First of all, congrats on your new baby girl, right?
Yeah. Baby girl, yeah. Emma Jones, number 4 for us. Yeah.
And you don't look sleep deprived at all.
I think it's the lighting. Cause I'm totally, it's the allergies, the sleep, like coffee, everything. But I appreciate it.
Coffee is essential. Coffee is essential. Yeah, yeah. You know, my wife and I, we stopped at 2, like, you know, we got to the second and I have 2 siblings. So I was like, well, maybe we'll have 3. And after the second one, there's like, no, if we have one more, we are going to be outnumbered. And so you are severely outnumbered, my friend.
So you say you have 2 other siblings?
Yes.
Yeah. So me, I'm 1 of 6. So this is like, it's just normal to me. This is
old hat for you then. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
I was one of the babies though. So it's slightly difficult game. But the noise is like nothing.
So You're getting started with this this business and creating these tracks. Talk a little bit. I'm a bit of a tech nerd when it comes to this, so I have to ask. Talk a little bit about actually making the track. So you said it's you and your wife are singing all the vocal parts, right?
Yeah. I mean, so a choir director will send us a piece of music, and if it has accompaniment, we'll lay down accompaniment. And even if it has like other accompaniment instruments there, we'll do that as well. And then typically, so I sing tenor, and my wife is a soprano, so I only have low notes like in the morning, as most of us do. So I always sing the bass part first, and even if it's again like I'm super honest about this. If there's a low E flat and I can't sing it, like I'll sing an F, and then, you know, post-production magic turns it into an E flat. I mean, I have to. So like, yeah. I mean, and all the tenor stuff I have for days and bass and baritone, it's like, I only have a few hours, short hours in the morning to get those done. So yeah. So I'll sort of, you know, sing bass, baritone. And then by then I'm kind of fully warmed up. And then I'll lay down tenor parts. And then my wife and I actually, we have two different computers, the same type of computer, we just use Macs. And so I'll sort of share my file with her, and she'll pick it up on our Google Drive. And then she'll lay down her soprano alto parts, and then she'll send it back to me. And then we do all of our post-production in-house too. So I've had to watch hours and hours and hours of YouTube stuff and like read articles on how to post produce, and I'm still learning. So yeah, so that's basically what we do. I'll do accompaniment, lay down the men's parts, send it to my wife. She'll do hers, send it back to me. I throw it through some post-production, and then I'll export tracks and then send it back to the choir director.
You know, what you're talking about is great, because a lot of resources out there, you know, it's MIDI files, or it's maybe just a piano playing a part, but the fact that you've got people actually singing these parts, that just adds a lot of different layers to these recordings that singers can benefit from.
Yeah. And I found that too, you know, like when I was teaching, we would have all state choir or like all district choir. And some of us teachers would like, we would make some of the practice tracks for like our district music, and it would all be piano. And like, you know, it did its job, but when you have the human voice to sort of like, I mean, we every time we get a piece of music, I tend to score study it like pretty heavily before I hit record. I look at all the dynamics. I look at the text. I look at just the genre of the piece. Like, we're not going to sing a Palestrina the same way we'd sing a Moses Hogan, you know, it's right. Like, it's not right. The same, you know, it's same foundational vocal technique, but a different style of singing, you know? And so we take all that into account before we hit record. And we just want the singer to be able to polish as much as possible so that the director has like all this free, I wouldn't say free time, but more time and more room to like make it magical and memorable, you know?
Right. Yeah. You're not wasting nearly as much time pounding notes and rhythms because, yeah, hopefully they've taken care of that before they're coming into that rehearsal room. Yeah. That's awesome.
And again, like I reiterate, like this doesn't take away from music literacy. It's just, you know, teach the piece how you teach the piece. And then, you know, I always had this saying of like, I taught it to you once, like we've gone through every note. Now it's your job to polish it, retain it when we come back, you know, next week or whatever.
Yep. Just another tool in the toolbox, a very valuable tool
in the
toolbox. Yeah. So let's talk about the logistics of this. So if I'm a choir director and I'm looking for tracks for a particular piece, I just end up going to your website and I can go through the library. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we only started this couple years ago. I think this August will have been 3 years exactly. So we haven't been doing this for so long. So yeah, you can go on our song library, and I think we have maybe close 200-ish pieces on there right now. All like SATB, men's, women's. We have some children's choir stuff on there, holiday. So you can look through our song library. You can just search by title or voicing. You could search by composer, anything like that. And you could just download it straight from there. I mean, you know, put in your information and you'll be emailed a zip file. And if we don't have a piece on there, you can just contact us. We have an order form online, like right at our top menu. You just fill out the order form. And if you have a PDF of the piece, you know, with you, then you can attach to the order form and like, we'll get started once we get the piece in, you know? So we try to make it as easy as a customer journey as possible, because we know like teachers' brain power is being used somewhere else. And so like, we want to, you know, give them all the brain power for what else they need it for. Cause I was there, I was in your shoes, you guys, like, I get it. You don't have time to make all these tracks. Like, let us do it. It takes some time, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's fantastic. So when I place an order for a practice track for one of the pieces, is it just one track? Like, what are the tracks that choir directors get as part of that package?
Yeah. That's a great question. So all of our tracks, track packages are the same. We call them track styles. So our track package includes all of our track styles, and it will always include a full mix. And that's kind of like radio ready or, you know, album ready sort of balanced voices type. And then you'll have an accompaniment track only if there is accompaniment. Obviously, if it's a cappella, you won't get that. And then you'll have a part specific track, which is, let's just say it's Lacrimosa again, for example, like the Lacrimosa tenor track. It'll be everything else turned down pretty quietly, even the accompaniment, but you'll hear the tenor track like cut through like a knife, you know? So you get your part specific track, you get your part specific mute, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's everything except that one part. So like your high level singers can rehearse at home that way, you know, without hearing their part. They're kind of on their own. And then you get this, what we find kind of special, the part specific left track. And so that's only your part in the left ear or the left speaker, and then everything else in the right side. So it's specifically helpful. That sort of track style plays double duty, especially when you're rehearsing with headphones, because you can take the left one off and it becomes a part specific mute track, or you can take the right one off and it's only sounding your part, like no accompaniment, no other choir parts, just your part, like essentially a cappella. And so when you put them on, it kind of like mixes it together, but you have multiple ways to use that part specific left track. And that comes for every single part. So if it's an 8-part song, you get a ton of tracks in the track package.
That's fantastic. You know, there are other resources out there, but all of these things that you're talking about where, you know, it's a singer that's singing the part, it's singers that's what sort of with the appropriate timbre, right? It's not me trying to sing the bass two part, which would never happen.
Which I do try, and sometimes I'm unsuccessful.
Yeah, I can sometimes sing with my sopranos, but my bass twos, I'm like, I just look and I'm like, basses, I'm just gonna help you an octave up because there's no way you're on your own. I don't have the low E. I've never had a low E. That's just the way it is.
It's funny you say that, because I've learned, you know, all these, you know, vocal techniques of singing tenor and maybe some like high baritone stuff, but I've never learned like bass choral vocal technique. But thankfully, in the Ambassadors of Harmony that I sing with, the barbershop chorus, Dr. Jim Henry is like one of the best bass singers in barbershop. And every time he is teaching our bass section, I stick on him like glue. And I try and sing how he teaches real basses, quote unquote, like during rehearsal. And I try to just emulate that when I'm singing like my fake bass, you know? So I feel like the luckiest guy in the world. Everything's just sort of fallen in my lap, because I have one of the best bass singers in the world that I get to see every Thursday at rehearsal for 3 hours. And it's like, you know, I wouldn't be able to sing remotely any sort of bass style if it wasn't for him being in front of me, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic. The left and right tracks that you're talking about, that's not anything I've ever seen or I've ever personally heard of. So, you know, what a flexible tool, you know, for singers, you know, because it's sort of it's almost like the old books, to choose your own adventure. They have all of those resources at their disposal. And so depending on the level of the singer, depending on where they're at in the rehearsal process, they can utilize that resource in a lot of different ways to sort of fit where they are in that process. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And you know, we've had real high school choir directors come back and tell us like, I use these in sectionals, like, cause you know, I don't have one person that plays piano, but you know, I have practice rooms with computers and they go back and they play, you know, whatever track for their sectional and they come back and they know it. And that, you know, sort of left track, you know, it's like that part specific track is for your like sort of, you know, beginning level singers. And then you have those left tracks for your like intermediate, cause you can do both, you know, mute or part specific sort of at the same time. And then those mute tracks are like when you really want to challenge any of your singers, really. Doesn't just have to be your advanced ones, but you know, you can even like test that way. We've had teachers coming back and be like, you know, today was a testing day and I was able to like, you know, you and I both know not all choral directors can play piano. So like not having to sort of like fake through an accompaniment while they're trying to listen to their, you know, bass, sing their part. It's like, they just hit the mute track and they can actually focus and give good, like critical, like, you know, pointers back to their singer rather than like half and half, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Being able to focus while you're listening is so incredibly important. So yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
And like, I just know, cause I was there. I've been there way too many times. So like, we get it, teachers. We were in your shoes. We totally get it.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is, you know, again, I've seen other resources where it's someone who has maybe traditionally been a professional vocalist and, you know, you are both, you know, you've been in the classroom. So you have lived what these teachers are doing every single day. And so you've got a very unique perspective that can be very beneficial in providing resources to choir directors.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I empathize with teachers still, like even when I was a teacher and I had a show choir too. And, you know, with show choir, one of the problems that I faced a lot, and you may have a different, perspective on this, but a lot of the show choir people didn't know how to read music. They were great dancers and they were like, okay, singers. But like a lot of my men, we would get like the show track CD, you know, and like rehearse the dance with it. But then all my men would start singing melody, like, because like, they would gravitate towards it. Or if it's like a really well-known pop song, they would just automatically start singing a melody. And so you have to not only deconstruct them learning the melody, but then you have to reconstruct teaching them the harmony parts. And it may be like polyphonic based on what the actual melody is, which is even harder.
Right.
So like that's, so I totally get it. I was right there with you guys. And like, that's why I think our product works so well, is that you can use that like just accompaniment track or like just bass track or just tenor, even for show choir stuff. And you don't run that risk of like, oh my gosh, the basses are singing the melody again. It's like, just if you don't know the part, just lip sync it, please. You know, like, I've said that so many times.
Well, as we wrap up here, Charlie, first of all, thank you again for being on the podcast. And for choir directors out there that want to connect with you and get more information on what you do and the resources that you have out there, where can they find you?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I mean, search Kinnison Choral Co. You can go to our website. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can find us on those three platforms. Our website is just www.kinnisonchoralco. That's KinnisonChoralco.com. And you know, come say hi to us on Instagram. Come say hi to us on Facebook. We're just normal people, Matt. Like, we're just former teachers who, you know, still have a passion for music education, and parents to now four kids. Like, we're not celebrities or anything. We're just normal people like you guys. Like, you know, nothing's changed. We still feel like educators at heart.
Yeah, definitely educators at heart. And we'll be sure to put a link to your website in the show notes so that people can find it. And yeah. really the only negative I see is that you're in St. Louis, which means you're probably a Cardinals fan.
I'm a huge Cards fan. Go Cards. The baseball just started back up.
I just want you to know I broke my rule of no Cardinals fans on the podcast being a Cubs fan. So I made the exception just for you. So well,
3/4 of my family are from Chicago. So I've been living this rivalry like my entire life. So
totally. My goodness, you are the black sheep of your family.
I totally am. That's so funny.
Well, Charlie, thank you again for being on the podcast. And I can't wait to have our audience go and check out everything that you're doing, because what a great resource.
Thank you, Matt, so much. I really appreciate the time.
Well, that is it for my conversation with Charlie Kinnison. Such a fun conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Now, if you want to find Charlie and Carrie over at Kinnison Choral Company, you can go to kinnisonchoralco.com or just go to choirdirectorcorner.com/Kinnison, KinnisOn. And I will have all the information and some links where you can find them and the important work that they are doing for choir directors. Thanks so much for listening this week. Keep being awesome, and I will see you next week. Are you looking for resources that will save you time and frustration? Want to dive deeper into topics related to your teaching? Then check out the Choir Director Corner community membership over at choirdirectorcorner.com/membership.